Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Howdy, watchers, it's Dan, and thank you so much for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. It's a little surreal that we're already at 37 episodes. Thanks for sticking with us. First up this week, Nine and I gave our feedback for the Wet and Wild Hulu miniseries Pam and Tommy. This feedback segment does get a bit spoilery and references various adult situations, so please be warned if you're trying to avoid spoilers, anatomy puns, and the cultural significance of 90s Eurodance. Nine references the song Music Instructor by Him, which we will also link in the episode description for what I hope is your listening pleasure. I then asked Scott and Nine to delve into the dark side of Marvel by watching the first two episodes of the limited Hulu series Hellstrom. Given the recent entrance of Moon Knight on Disney+, the reference to Black Knight in the Eternals, and the upcoming Blade movie, I can't wait to hear what they think. If this podcast is the best or worst thing you've ever heard, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And if you hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook page, you'll probably get an informative or witty response from one of us, if that's the thing you want. Finally, if you have a show or movie you want us to watch, please leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, watchers, once again, remember what the internet is for, and also, in Feige we trust.
Hey everyone, this is Scott, and we are here now to get feedback on the Hulu limited series Pam and Tommy. This is the story of Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee, and a very well-known home video that they made and then was released widely. So, and I selected episodes 1 and 2 of the series for Dan and Nine to watch. So, guys, what'd you think?
I don't wear a Speedo, so I don't know what he stuffed in that Speedo, but I assume that penis was CGI'd. But I could be wrong. Yeah. Ultimately, this was interesting. It had been on my list for a while, so I was glad I finally had the opportunity to move forward and check it out, especially since Kate kept saying, hey, can we watch this? So I was like, let's watch something else. It was good to jump into this, and especially being a Seth Rogen fan, I enjoyed this. It was interesting in the first two episodes to watch how the tone swung, but it's funny because I think they did a good job, and this is what keeps me going with it in terms of balancing both sort of the random quirkiness and wackiness of what you expect from a Seth Rogen joint, but also kind of taking sort of a bit of the seriousness with it of what's going on. Like, there is that undercurrent. And I think maybe I'm pulling in more from clips of what I see later, because they did this season on Pam and Tommy. So clearly, I think there's a tonal shift later as well. But overall, I think they're doing an interesting, good job with this. And it's definitely a compelling series, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, again, there are a couple of scenes, of course, you know, caught me a little off guard. You know, I almost wanted to nickname my review Sausage Party 2, but but didn't quite go there. But yeah, no, but in all seriousness, yeah, I think that the characters that are in this and even, you know, the portrayals of the titular characters themselves, and I do mean titular.
I was going to say, I'm sure you chose that word very...
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You could say you were fully abreast of the situation.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, but I think that there it was all like really pretty accurate in a lot of different ways, and so I really appreciated that those elements. And you know, I wish I had you know more downtime this week to go beyond where you know this first two episodes. But you know, I definitely will finish it. It's just a matter of you know when can I squeeze it in, and it'll probably happen.
When will you squeeze it in? You say?
Damn, man, that one I did not intend actually.
Nice.
I guess I'm not running out to finish this one for some reason, because maybe it was just the abruptness of the tonal shifts and the fact that Tommy Lee is so unlikable in this.
Yes.
Sebastian Stan's doing a great job, but I hated Tommy Lee the entire time because I didn't have a big opinion on him. But if this portrayal is accurate, I cannot stand this person. And also, This is a great lesson to all homeowners. Don't screw over your contractors.
Yes.
Even if you 100%. Don't have a sex tape in the safe, don't screw over your contractors.
I agree. And as a project manager, I have to say, if you sign off on final specifications, or AKA in this case, the architectural plans, you generally have to understand that you're going to need to basically put your money where your mouth is in order to make up for the difference in cost and resources and time. So it's that simple.
Yeah. Well, I agree that I think Sebastian Stan did such a great job of making Tommy Lee, yes, very much unlikable, especially in these earlier episodes. But I think if you are able to stick with it and finish out the series, be interested to hear if your opinion of him changes as it gets towards the end, because I think they do start out, I think, focusing a lot on shock value. And then I felt the same way. But then by the end, I was really coming around a little bit and almost did actually feel a little bad for him.
Yeah. I think that's a hallmark of good storytelling, right? That you have characters evolving and growing over time. So that arc doesn't surprise me, but I'm glad to hear it's there, because you even get that sense of good storytelling in the very first episode, because we're welcome to spoiler country, but you got Rand, you have that flashback to his childhood about him, like with his terrible father and him peeing his pants. And then you have that scene of him, like, you know, with the urine soaked pants. I was like, oh, there's something here. That said, this could have all been solved potentially, or at least that's the conversation I had with Kate, in that maybe he should have just gotten his money up front and none of this would have happened.
Right.
Because that seemed it could have avoided a lot of problems.
Yeah, yes, I thought that too. He could have just walked away, right, if he didn't get paid.
Not to walk away, but to not even start the project to begin with. And get the deposit that contractors would get.
Exactly. Because again, not every contractor is fully solvent, in which case they can outlay what I would gesture to say is 80% of the original building materials, let alone all the changes that came forth multiple times in the course of the first two episodes.
Yes,
but that's a whole other story. I mean, again, the way I see it is that maybe just, I mean, no offense to Tommy, but he clearly felt he was entitled in this situation. As being, a top rock star out there.
No, I mean, absolutely. And his penis, no matter how much sense his penis might have spoken, he wasn't going to listen to it. Which, I mean, most people are applauded for not thinking with their penises. But in this case, Jason Mantzoukas did a great job.
He did amazing.
Yeah.
I was going to bring that up, yeah. And the penis did make some interesting points.
Yeah, very interesting.
I was really happy to see male nudity as opposed to just female nudity, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I'm kind of appreciating that shift where it's not just women getting naked and men kind of maybe you see some nude from behind, but it's not all about the male gaze all the time. It's great to, I think Righteous Gemstones actually does a really good job of, I think it's all male nudity randomly in Righteous Gemstones. And I don't think there's any female nudity. It's great to see that flipped, because for just so many years, it's all been about the male gaze. And if you guys, we can have one day maybe have a whole discussion about Laura Mulvey's visual pleasure and narrative cinema, but that's not, let's just talk about dick at this point. I think it's just cool to see. I think it's a nice flip, and it was appropriate, drove the story, and, you know, kind of subverted the dominant paradigm, maybe.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And along similar lines, I noticed that in the end credits, Lily James and Sebastian Stan were listed on the same line. Like, it wasn't, I was wondering, like, which one of them might get top billing, so to speak, but they were both listed together, which I thought was interesting.
Mm. Makes sense.
And
Lily James is doing such a good job.
Yeah. I mean, the voice is uncanny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And especially as the series goes on, I think she gets more comfortable even in her role as Pam and continues to do a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nyan, to your excitement of hearing about Nick Offerman being in this, he was awesome.
Oh yeah, he was great. And in that scene, Dan, you'll appreciate this. I love a good Parkan reference.
Yes. Oh my god,
that was amazing. As former lighting designers,
I was dying. I was like literally dying when they mentioned it. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is perfect.
Oh yeah, and Offerman, agreed, did an awesome job.
Yes, I was just going to say it seems uncanny how perfect the casting was, right? With Nick Offerman and also Seth Rogen, I think.
Yeah, I agreed.
Yeah.
So I'm sure to question on to Scott for a second, because we had a previous feedback, we commented a lot about the soundtrack. So what are your years and nine thoughts about the soundtrack?
Yeah, but definitely a fan. I think they picked some good, they had some good choices for the soundtrack.
Was there a song that stood out, Scott, that kind of grabbed you, or you were like, oh, I'm so glad to hear that in this, like, haven't heard that in forever?
Nothing's coming to mind right away, but maybe if someone else mentions something, I'll remember it.
From my perspective, I thought they killed it with the soundtrack. As someone who is firmly in the 90s camp and hates the 80s, it was great to finally hear random 90s Euro dance. I was so happy to hear LaBouche.
Yes.
LaBouche. Oh, my God.
One so thing I noted, yeah.
And then when I said that, Kate rolled her eyes. The minute I started talking about Eurodance, because my friends in high school growing up, a couple of them were from first generation European folks and European American folks. And so they would occasionally go back to Europe and bring back all these random 90s Eurodance CDs, which 90s Eurodance is a trip. It is insane.
It is.
There's a lot of good random dance music, but there's a lot of weird, weird stuff. So
yeah, we'll have to have a discussion about that on our sister podcast. Listen, okay, please.
Yes, exactly.
Well, the mid 90s did bring us Ace of Base, right?
True.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I have to know, did anyone in the clique, so to speak, were fans of Erasure?
I don't think Erasure was the kind of stuff that they were looking for. It was a little more hardcore in terms of and deeper cuts. I don't think Erasure necessarily. Maybe George, but ultimately, I think Erasure wasn't exactly what they were looking for in terms of Eurodance. It was a very distinct style that seemed to capture our attention at the time, where you have the dance beat, the chorus, a random guy raps, then you go back to the chorus, the random verses, and then maybe the guy raps again over a very intense beat. It's incredibly formulaic. There's actually a song called, I think it's called Music Instructor, where the entire song is this guy randomly putting together a song, a Eurodance song. It's like, oh, here's the hi-hat. And it's real weird.
So it's basically like every music composer on TikTok right now, pretty much.
That's right. they all got it from Music Instructor. And I wish I remember what band that was.
Yeah, we'll add a little snazzy hi-hat here. We'll add a stumbling bass line over here.
Well, Nyan, you described that in pretty great detail.
Oh, my God. I ridiculous knowledge of 90s Eurodance, thanks to my friends in high school. Like,
but yeah.
No one needs to know this stuff. I mean, the big stuff like LaBouche, Real McCoy, like Real all McCoy. That stuff. Mm, love it.
And who could forget Len?
Oh, I called that Len when it came out too.
Yes, I was now that you mentioned it. Yes, I remember when they used that in the show. That was very, very good.
Yeah, it was pretty classic. So my one track I have to mention, of course, is with my background and whatnot, it was, of course, Getting to Know You from The King and I.
Oh, yeah. And that's actually one of the scenes that struck me from the whole series, and that it showed the potential of the series and where it could be going. Because that scene where they're watching The King and I together, you're getting a good sense of really who they are as people and what that relationship is. I thought that was fascinating to see that intimate moment. But yeah, love me some King and I.
But I loved it because the song itself was also laying on the fact that they didn't really know each other that well when they went through with everything. But they loved each other's company so much that they felt the need to go ahead and get hitched in that regard. So that was, it was great, kind of nuanced, layered, kind of like, how they tied in the two different P scenes like you mentioned before. There's a lot of this extra nuances underneath the choice of the soundtrack and also the choice of the scene. And I thought it was really interesting in how much like Pam is originally from Canada and she's from a different world from where he's from. And it's just like the King of Siam versus Anna. So there's a lot of real kind of nuance there to talking about The King and I as a musical as it relates to Pam and Tommy as a couple. It was very interesting.
Agreed. And I didn't think that scene was ham-fisted and the way the music was used. It felt organic enough not to feel cheesy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That could have easily been forced. Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. And that must have been a real riot to film for sure. They must have had a great time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I was interested in watching the show is you just see the headlines like, oh yeah, they got married after only knowing each other for 4 days or whatever the situation was. But it's like, what could that actually work? And what was that like once they actually got married and decided to actually try to make it last, to see some scenes both in the episodes that you guys watch and also throughout the show, you do get more of that sense that this was not just for show, that they really did try to make this work and they had real feelings for each other.
I think what concerns me is that it kind of reinforces the message that stalking works, which is a little creepy.
I agree.
Because the fact that he's literally like tracking her down at a hotel in Mexico and she says,
I'm coming to Mexico. You're not coming to Mexico.
Yeah.
You're not coming to Cancun.
Also, it seems like there's now been quite a bit of looking back on how women were treated around that time, right? Like in the mid-90s, 2000, also with the Britney documentary that, I don't know if you guys saw that, but I saw that and it was both fascinating, but also really galling to see how she was treated going through what she went through. And I kind of got a similar feeling here where it's like, then you see how Pamela Anderson was treated throughout this whole ordeal. And it was not very nice. Like to put it mildly, like she really was put through the ringer. And at least I think it's a good thing that now people are like trying to explore that and think like, man, was done to her in the media and for other people who were just kind of looking at the tabloids through all this was really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in some ways things haven't gotten better necessarily. We're like a little bit better, but there's still a ways to go, but yeah, that's a good point. Like, I mean, I think that is something that this show seems to be a good job doing is, or at least we'll do as it goes on to the episodes we will hopefully watch later, is that it shows how horrible women are treated in these types of situations, or just generally by the entertainment industry and, well, any industry for that matter. So I think it just makes sense to continue to shed a light on that and not stand for it, because we can always do better.
Agreed. Yeah, for sure. So Nyan, it seemed like you might not be interested in watching the rest of the series. Is that what you were getting at before?
So I'm interested in finishing it. It's not going to be one of those things like I need to absolutely watch to completion right away. Like it'll probably be something I kind of grab onto every once in a while. But I guess I'll contrast that with The Dropout, where I was like, oh, I need to watch every episode of this. Or Succession, like I need to see the next episode. It hasn't quite pulled me into that at this point. I think it's because maybe it's because of the polarization to an extent of how we feel about some of the characters and what they're doing, but I'm not rushing out the door to watch the rest of the episodes. I still will eventually, because I think I do want to finish it, but it's just not going to be as much of a priority.
Okay, that's cool. And Dan, how about you?
Yeah, like I said, I'm going to get back. I'm definitely going to finish it. It's just a matter of when I could squeeze it in with everything else that's happening. Again, there's so many other things like, you know, that were out there that were really awesome. I thought, you know, little details. I mean, A, they had a foam party, which I thought was hilarious because, you know,
I love that scene.
Yeah, that was great. And when they were at the hotel and he put like the door hangs on his dick, that was pretty hilarious too. And I loved how the champagne was popping right at the cork was popping out right at the right moment, of course. So that was, you know, they did a lot of, you know, little, again, it was very, you know, 90s kind of details in the you know, camera work and the focus or whatnot. That was really great. And even, you know, when Rand was pleasuring himself to, you know, lovely videos in his place, I mean, I feel that happened to hundreds of thousands of people in LA at the time. So definitely accurate. And also the commentary about everything's going to video was classic too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I did very much enjoy when Seth Rogen was trying to explain to Nick Offerman how the internet works.
Yep.
That really kind of takes me back to that point in time where people weren't exactly sure what it was.
Yeah, because the internet is really, really great.
For
porn.
Thank you.
The one final thing, I did mention the entitlement play. Once again, they had to choose, like, where are we going to live? Hollywood Hills or Malibu? Like, that is such a that statement with itself. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, that is like insane to me.
Yeah,
hard, pretty much. Heard that here for a pimp.
So, yeah, it is. Big pimp and ain't easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah, I had to ask one last question because we did talk about extra credit last time. Did anybody watch the actual tape?
Oh, no, I didn't go back and watch that. I probably watched it years ago, but yeah, I didn't go back and watch the actual.
No, while it would have been, you know, very helpful, I think, for research purposes, I did not get a chance to do that.
It's all good. From memory, you know, I feel like that they're how they acted and things that they did. I feel like that how Lily and how Sebastian kind of portrayed things was pretty dead on accurate. You know, the mannerisms, all the I love yous and all these little things. I feel like that happened in the video before or whatnot. So maybe my memory is playing tricks on me. But I felt like that's what I think really drew me in and really kind of convinced me of the performance, is that we may have watched this in a previous life, so to speak. I think that really kind of tied into that memory of seeing that in the past, possibly. So that maybe that's what really kind of helps sell it to me, as well as contextually within the story and whatnot.
I think you're right. I think it does actually sound familiar from what I remember of the video, like that it truly was like a very intimate, not like a sort of amateur porn scenario where you're just your porn stars, but pretending to be amateurs. Like it was very much an intimate video. So, and from what I recall, I think they are doing a good job, like you noted, and it really is hitting it spot on from what I remember.
One thing I learned from later in the series, and this is not a major plot point or spoiler, I think, really at all, but I just didn't know this. Apparently, Pamela Anderson auditioned for the role that eventually went to Elizabeth Hurley in Austin Powers.
Oh, that's wild.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that's pretty wild. But although she's probably, you know, more suited for like the fembot kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. In definitely mind, could see her in the Heather Graham role. Yeah. Or fembots, or yeah, sorry, I was just thinking.
Oh yeah, for Austin, I was thinking about Austin 1, but yeah, if you talk about other, yeah, the later ones, yeah, we can talk about
it. Yeah, the sequel, yeah, sorry.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, again, you know, everyone wants to be a member of that cast.
No question about it. All right, well, thanks, guys, and I guess that's what you thought.
Yep. Yes. All right, it's Dan. I'm back with another pitch here for Nyan and Scott. And this time I'm going back to comics related items again. So surprise, surprise there. I'm pitching the Hellstrom TV series on Hulu. It's a 10 episode series. It actually ended up being canceled later in the year after it aired. It seems a lot of the Marvel television related projects other than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tended not to get a lot of love, not just from Marvel Studios in some cases, but also from the fans as well. And some of them have good reason. And I'm talking to you Inhumans. But I think what really kicked me off to want to pitch this, I think, came out of the fact that, you know, obviously we're getting inundated with all these new Marvel shows, and they're going into kind of more of the supernatural area, but also because there's a bit of a horror element. And we've been on the kind of this horror kind of, you know, throw over the past, you know, 10 to 15 episodes. We've had a couple interspersed here and there. So I thought that those were two first original reasons. So I know both of you do watch Marvel projects. So obviously there's a hook for you there. But beyond that, you know, I think that there is an interesting story for sure that's there. And if you stick around to the end, then you get an appearance by Mitch Pileggi. So. But in any case, about the series itself. So the series was, like I said, created for Hulu based on the Marvel Comics characters of Damon and Satana Hellstrom. And it's a standalone story. It's set within the MCU. I don't know if they'll show up, if they do a Midnight Suns or other related team up or whatnot at some point. It'll be interesting to see where it could tie in the future. Other than that, I think that the premise of the story is very interesting. So it's the two people, Tom Austin and Cindy Lemon, they star as Damon and they call her, she goes by Anna Hellstrom. And they're children of a very powerful Satanist serial killer. That's the premise, but they start with, and they don't really talk to each other at the beginning of the series at all. They're living in two different places, in fact, in Portland and San Francisco, respectively. And it's interesting, they're what they do for livings as well. So in the series, Damon is actually a psychology professor, and he also consults with a local psychiatric institution where his where their mother also happens to be resident of, because she is, you learn about some more about their father and about the weird concepts that have been occurring here. And as with any Marvel series, yes, they're in, both the twins have, both the siblings, have powers, obviously. So, and they're all relating to the dark and the supernatural. So the idea is that they've gotten these power, these dark magic powers, basically from indirectly from their father as a result of some of the work that he did. And all this family relations kind of ties into each other as the series goes on. So you learn more and more about the history of the family, and you see there is action obviously as well. And there are some, you know, more kind of self-contained episodes, but it all kind of just draws this thing together. And I think it's definitely a different feel. So for those of you out there who were checking out Moon Knight right now, as it's coming out as we record this, you know, it's in the kind of, it's in a similar vein, but this is way more horror and supernatural than it is more of a supernatural is to Moon Knight or whatnot. So I think that's a little bit about the series. Some people said that, you know, that they weren't feeling everything here. And again, there is a bit of a, maybe a long play in over the 10 episodes. But again, I thought that, you know, I thought that the series was very well done. The acting with it was pretty interesting as well, and music was good too, I thought. So I thought, you know, I said, hey, you know, this is a little known property, and I said, you know, I think you guys should give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of this one actually. When did this series come out?
The entire series got dropped on October 16th, 2020, and it was canceled on December 14th, 2020.
Oh wow.
I mean, there are other series as well that, you know, that I think the Marvel related series I probably will pitch as well, that it's on my queue, if you will. But again, this one I thought was, you know, since we're on this horror kick, this is kind of where I felt this needed to kind of progress.
Okay, interesting. How do you think this show is in terms of like the quality of this show compared to some of the other Marvel TV shows?
Well, again, obviously this is a Marvel television production, and in conjunction with ABC. So this is very much like a la The Runaways and Cloak and Dagger and whatnot. So it definitely, and Inhumans and whatnot. I feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of got the most budget out of all the series I just mentioned. And there are, again, the effects I think were pretty decent, I think, all things considered. That being said, I really feel that there was, on a marketing perspective, there was like zero love for this. They were not pushing this out at all, and I think that's a lot of the reason why like it got canceled is that some people who did see it, they're expecting, you know, this big bombastic Avengers level kind of interaction and action, and I think that, you know, not all that exists in the realm of comic interpretations of in TV and film are going to be that Infinity War or Endgame level kind of event. And I think that people have to understand that, you know, they're, even though again this is the darker side of Marvel in some ways, and I think that that's inherently within itself is interesting. And I think that haters that hate on this, basically they want the nonstop action from front to back of the show, and the plot is important, but it's not as relevant to there.
Huh. I remember when this came out, and I didn't think it was going to do well.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, I'm willing to give it a shot. Is there anything you think that I would pull away from it specifically?
Yeah, and again, I think that the dark, for me, again, I think seeing the darker side of the MCU is kind of key. And again, I really kind of feel that because they gave this a shot and they saw that it was, you know, possible to kind of, you know, put dark or supernatural Marvel out there, I think this kind of laid the path for Moon Knight to become a thing, I think. Indirectly, because again, a lot in humans, it's a different look at the idea of mutants, not mutants per se, is strictly in the term, but people that have powers, basically. It's where I kind of go from there. And I think that seeing the darker side, seeing a little bit more of the psychological, you know, in play here, in how that intersperses with that, and how it intersperses with the idea of, you know, how almost everyone in humanity has darker tendencies. Back in the day during college, I know I've mentioned to you the Dan Fisher bipolar theory of human nature, and that for every good thing a person does, they're capable of an equally bad thing given certain circumstances. So
yeah, No, I do recall that theory. I was pretty drunk at the time, but I do remember it.
I think we all were at the time. We all drunk. We were drunk at the time. Because that's probably the only time I wanted. I got really deep in talking about that stuff. So
I was going to say that's probably when you had the most clarity in your deep thoughts.
Yes, that and on the toilet. Yes.
Yes. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I appreciate you giving me the reason to watch it because I wasn't going to go out of my way for it. I was aware of the characters generally. This seems like one of those random comics I would have read when I was a kid. So spoiler alert for folks who don't know me personally. My parents, being an indie person, they owned a convenience store when I was a kid because we love stereotypes. And they would have a rotating selection of comics that would just be in the newsstand, like with all the other magazines. And so they would let me read them and then just put them back. So I would read like, but there was never a consistent order of comics. Like it wouldn't get like, excuse me, Moon Knight example. Like I wouldn't get an entire run of Moon Knight. I get like Moon Knight and then I get something randomly else. I get actually Darkhold, which is something that I'm going to touch on in a bit that would show up randomly and I'd end up reading that. And then I put that back on the shelf. And so I think Hellstrom popped up randomly and that's how I know it, but kind of before the show came out, because that's why it seems kind of familiar. But I do enjoy the sort of darker parts of the Marvel Universe. And I've kind of been holding out hopes for a Darkhold series because I'm looking at a cardboard box in my office right now that has a bunch of Darkhold comics in it that people are welcome to buy if they want to buy these from me, because I'd love to get them out of my house. But the Darkhold series itself and that tie into the Midnight Suns is pretty cool. So, but it wasn't enough to pull me in when this first came out. So maybe I missed it out. Maybe this is a hidden gem and I'm kind of.
Yeah, I guess I think this is a different kind of foray, you know, into the other series. Like, so if you're looking for something that's going to be action, super action oriented, there is action in here, but again it's not Iron Man blasting things, not Cap throwing a shield, you know. So I think, you know, that's the one kind of expectation I want to throw out there for people that would be joining Scott and I on this watch here, is that, you know, you have to go in there for the story, for the concept, the dark part of it and whatnot. And for those of you, you know, listening to this as well, you know, I believe when this drops, it's going to be at or around the time it's going to coincide with the release of Doctor Strange 2 Multiverse of Madness, speaking of the Darkhold. So I think that it's kind of serendipity in a way. So,
and I hope that coincides with my comic book collection going up in value, that people are open to buy. If anytime you hit us up on Watch OK Please on any of the social medias and I will sell you my comic book collection.
There you go.
Thank you.
Even more incentive to pay attention to this.
Exactly.
But yeah, and you know, I'm all about anything Marvel or comic book related, but yeah, this one just slipped by without me really knowing that it was there. So I am very much looking forward to seeing what it's about.
Yeah. It's going to be and I know some of the actors in here are probably familiar. I know Sydney Lemon, I think she's in Succession?
Sydney who?
Sydney Lemon.
Doesn't ring a bell.
I don't know.
But it doesn't mean she isn't in there. It's pretty big cast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tom Austin's been in a handful of things, a lot of British stuff mostly. But yeah, they have there's a bunch of, you know, there's some other recurring characters in there. They might seem familiar, but a lot of them are, you know, not as mainstream as some of these other castings in the MCU. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.